Now then, you're welcome along to another RTE Rugby Podcast. Neil Tracy here with the two Johnnies this week. Corcon head coach Johnny Holland and Naas head coach Johnny Murphy. Lads, I'm not sure how we'll actually do this today. I might just do full names or something like that, or Johnny Naas or Johnny Con or something like that. We'll figure it out as we go on. Loads to get through always. Leinster's edgy win over the Northampton Saints gets them through to a third Investec Champions Cup final in a row. The BKT United Rugby Championship is back again this week, heading into the final three rounds of the regular season. And the playoff picture is as tight as it could possibly be, really, with just three rounds left to play. To start with, though, Johnny Holland insisted to get 10 minutes to gloat about Corcon's All-Ireland League title success just over a week ago. It was his one condition when I asked him to come onto the pod a couple of days ago. He said, look, I'll do it, but you got to give me 10 minutes at the start to gloat. I mean, the ego is getting out of control. I'm only joking. Johnny, like, massive congrats. Have the celebrations leveled out by now?
10 minutes is far, far too much for this gloat. No, I don't know if the celebration stopped. The lads went for quite a while. My celebration stopped long ago. I was trying to be an adult and a coach. But now, in fairness, now I think the amount of effort that goes into something like that, and as well, like, to be fair to Terenure and Clontarf Lansdowne, like the teams at the top, like the effort that it takes to top on a team like Terenure is ferocious, like, you know. So there's a lot of effort went into it. So I think the same amount of effort should go into celebrating it from the lads' perspective, at least. So they went fairly hard at it. And I was saying to someone that I had a couple of things to sort out with one or two of them. I might have had to message them about something here and there. And anytime I was signing off, I just said, keep driving it, you know, because I had the Sunday night obviously back in the club, and then Monday we tend to go to Kinsale if you win it, and that's a good day out. And you know, after that I was kind of living vicariously through the lads and looking at what they were up to and enjoying the kind of messing, but from a distance, you know. But now, in fairness, now they deserved every bit of it, and it was great. Yeah,
well, I mean, in fairness, I mean, you may as well milk every last drop out of it, considering, like, you know, 2019 when Corcon won it, and I think most people would probably say in 2020 they were odds on to do the two in a row, and then sure, COVID comes along and denies a title. I mean, you end up having to wait a few years to actually get your hands on the trophy again. So when you do, you may as well make the bloody most of it. Like,
yeah, I think, like, I've said this to a few people as well. Like, I mean, I wasn't shy about it, but Niall Keneally had a great point on the Saturday. We met up for a small bit of a captain's run, not much, but a bit of video on last few pieces. And like, Niall knows, like, at this stage he's 33, and he knows that, like, they're not easy to come by, you know. And he's been part of a very successful Corcon team, and he still has, I think he has three, you know, and that was, he had two when he said it. So he was just reminding the younger lads, because we've plenty of them, that, you know, they're not that easy to win. Like, it's a massive mountain to climb again the following year if you fall short. So, you know, why not do it now? And that was kind of some of the theme of from Saturday into Sunday. But, like, I think the real point there is that it is that hard to win them. Like, it's impossible. Like, Terenure are the standout team of the last couple of years, and they've got one from three finals, like, you know, and that's an incredible team. Like, so to win it is very, very difficult. So when you win it, I think from, like, Niall's perspective or my perspective as well, like, you know, and Johnny, you'll know yourself, like, to win anything is impossible. Like, and you go through your younger years thinking you'll have another one, and you may not. So when you win them, you kind of have to remind yourself to sit with it for a small while and enjoy it as much as you can, because there's a long way back.
Yeah, and it's funny, like you said there, like, they don't come around often. Now, for a club like Corcon, obviously they've won their fair share down the years and stuff like that. But the, I suppose one thing I spoke to you that I think it was the day after you won the semi final, and like, people associate Corcon with being a team that's there thereabouts pretty much every year. And like, I spoke to Jack Kelleher in the week of the final as well, and he was saying there's even though you hadn't won one in a few years, there's a thing with Con where there's an expectation that you should be thereabouts to be winning it. But like, as you explained to me, that even there's only a gap of 5 years to the last title, like, there was a lot of people in your squad this year that were either playing a first final or playing for a first All-Ireland title. Like, the turnover has been fairly significant in the last few years. Like, this is it's a new team as such.
It is a new team, and that's something that kind of, you know, people say you need to lose one to win one, and we were trying to not do that. Obviously, you know, it would be very easy to say, oh, we're young and this and that. And we, I think, today, was it, one of the days anyway leading up to it, I maybe in the semi-final, I'd asked lads in the Rochdon Park when we met, like, who has an AIL medal. And I was looking around the room at, like, Rob Jermyn, Niall Keneally, Brendan Quinlan, Matthew Bowen had one with Taran Yeor. So, like, we weren't looking at too many fellas that had won the league, like, you know. So it's a new team, you know, it's a very new team. And I think that's what was quite satisfying about it, that if you can keep that group together, you know, you'll have a crack at it again. But, you know, the expectation is high with Cork on. If you don't make the top four, it's a shambolic season. Like, you know, that's the expectation on you. And the top four, like, people will say to me, are you there, thereabouts? I hate being in the top four. If you're not winning it, like, you know, it's a failure, and there's no other way about it. Like, and that's not being egotistical. That's just what is expected of you. You know, it's and, like, you know, I'm not trying to say you'll win it every year. But trying to get to top two and competing and having a good crack at it is commendable. But, you know, when you don't win it, you lose. So that's the kind of mindset. And I don't like losing. You know, I don't like losing. But then you have to try and manage expectation around what's actually successful. You know, within that team, I think we'd come a long way this year. But we kind of, you know, we had a right crack at it at the end, which was very, very satisfying. But, you know, you talk about 2020, we were 14 games in a row. I think we hadn't lost that season. But you look at Taran Yeor coming into this game, they were 13, including their semi-final in a row. And it doesn't guarantee you any success. So it doesn't mean that we were going to be guaranteed the back-to-back in 2020, although I'd have liked a crack at it. But, you know, you can be, you know, finals take a life of their own and everything else. So, yeah, you can't guarantee any wins. So it's nice to get one under the belt.
And Johnny Murphy, like, you mentioned Matt Bowen having a medal with Taran Yeor last season. Like, the try-saving tackle down in the corner early in the second half for Johnny Murphy as an ex-winger. Did you ever have wheels like that to get back and make a cover and tackle the corner like that?
A very, very long time ago, probably in my English days. But, yeah, like, that, it's something like that. And you watch the highlights, like, that was genuine world class, you know, like, it was such. And I think the big thing was, like, some guys would get in that position and make that tackle, but to be able to actually, you know, have the wherewithal to be able to target the ball as you're tackling, to hold them up over the line, like, it was genuinely unbelievable to see. And a huge kind of moment within the kind of momentum within the game. But yeah, it was incredible and brilliant to see. We're harping on about it all the time. It's such a good league and a quality leagues across all five leagues. And I think, you know, they certainly showcased that in the final. It was certainly a brilliant watch.
And for Johnny Holland then, on that Matt Bowen tackle, like, You can make a lot out of these things with hindsight, but, like, when you look back at the game and the way the game was at that stage, I can't remember what the exact scoreline was, but I'm almost certain Taran Yeor had just scored a try, and it was straight off the restart. Aaron Egan makes the breakdown, puts Conor Phillips away. Given the way the cards were, you were obviously down players and stuff like that. I can't remember what the exact scoreline was, but I do, at the time watching it in the stadium, there was a sense that if that try was going in, it was going to be hard to stop Taran Yeor from that stage. When you look back at it now, like, small moments can have a massive impact on a game. And that was, I know you ended up winning by 11 points in the end, but, I mean, that could have tipped the scale.
That was the moment. And you said it yourself, like, small moments, but that's something we said to the lads all year, small actions and big moments, you know, because for Mitch to go, I think Rob Hederman had just come off. His hamstring was hanging from minute 7, I think. So I didn't realise that until half time when he told me. And Mitch went into full back straight away, nearly after half time, a position he hadn't played in since the junior game at the start of the season, I'd say. So for him to get his positioning right and get back like that, it was a massive moment. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that that was the winning of the game. And if they had scored at that stage, like, 14 points in a matter of moments would have been a massive blow for a team that were down numbers, you know. So if that had gone in, I think that was the swinging moment. But, you know, credit to the Mitch is the only person with back-to-back medals in Shannon in the 2000s. So he's he keeps reminding me of that. He keeps talking about it, you know, so I better give that a mention.
Last question, and it's one for both of you, I suppose. When does pre-season start? Have you already sent the message out saying, you know, look, lads, well done, well-deserved title and stuff, but be ready for June whatever, because that's when you're going to be out puking your guts up on a pitch?
We took a picture last night, the one that goes on the wall, and lads were kind of messing me like, oh, preseason starts next week. And I was kind of laughing to myself that preseason not that far away. For coaches, you start straight away because you have to keep your squad together and you have to manage numbers for next year. So it's the work doesn't stop. But I was talking to our S&C coach there over voice note, as we do these days. And, you know, he's kind of saying, Aaron, we'll leave them another week and then we might get a program out for this, like, you know, gym stuff. But that's going to go on for another bit. And then July, maybe, you know, start of July is generally when we get going, Johnny, is it?
Yeah, more or less that kind of July time. But yeah, I'd have some chance of trying to get my lads back in June now, I'd say. It'd be interesting. I wouldn't even try.
Well, listen, it was a great AIL season. Fair play to both of you. We'll move on to the Champions Cup then on Saturday. Leinster 20, Northampton Saints 17. Leinster through to an eighth Investec Champions Cup final in a row, or eighth Investec Champions Cup final in total, third in a row, and chasing a fifth title. They're going to take on Toulouse. It's funny, like the last few years, I'll put this one to Johnny Murphy. Last few years, they've made light work of teams in the semi-finals, particularly at home. And it was Toulouse on a couple of those occasions as well. This game seems to be following a similar pattern early in the second half. Like I was working at it on Saturday, and you're kind of, when you're doing the match report and stuff like that, you're tipping along. You get a lot of your stuff done at half time. And then I kind of said, you know what, I'll make a call maybe early in the second half and I'll start writing up the intro to this report and you can get it done nice and early. And then Leinster score a try and you're thinking, that's grand. An easy 40 minutes. There's not going to be too much stress. So you start writing out everything, and with about 10 minutes to go, everything I wrote there had to be chucked into the bin and copied and deleted and started all over again. Leo Cullen said it was an exciting game, probably a little bit too exciting. What did Northampton do to make it that close in the final quarter? Or alternatively, what did Leinster stop doing that made it a little bit too exciting?
Yeah, I think a couple of things started to stick for Northampton that weren't in the first half. Like you look at their accuracy in the first half, particularly off set piece line out where they launch a lot of their plays. And then even a multi-phase, a couple of those passes and those extra offloads weren't sticking. And then I think they got just a period where, you know, kind of a big thing, they seem to get a lot of energy from, I think for me at 60 minutes, when that kick is missed at kind of 20-10, you're thinking they kind of go, and like it's a kick that you would back burn to get all the time. They go, right, okay, we've a shot here. And also their last try comes off, you know, a turnover line out in the 22 where they get a break, and then they don't actually complete that line out. But off that, they hold Baird up and they get a scrum, they get a 5 meter scrum, and then they're into it. Then that was kind of, they just managed to eke out and stay in the game. Somehow they just managed to, and I suppose that's just because they're probably so battle hardened in terms of, you know, they played Quins last weekend. You know, the Premiership means that players have to play and play and play, and they just found a way to stay in the game. And then the last kind of, for me, the last block is unbelievable. Like it's 3 minutes and 31 seconds, and the transition there from, you know, particularly from Conan to get back off their turnover ball there when Leinster are kind of, but it was just, I think it was just their ability to stay in. And you read the reports, I think that comes from probably the calmness of the touchline. You read the reports and listening to kind of everything that went on from a Northampton perspective. The players have been asked all week, what was the dressing room like at halftime? And they said it was really calm. It was just like, look, if we stick this, or we, you know, we get a score here, we stay in, then we'll get, you know, a couple of people were saying that Sam Vesti was saying after, we'll get one chance. If we stay in this in the last 5 minutes, we will work to get a chance. And then it's about taking that. Fortunately, they didn't, for them, they didn't get to take that. But they just managed to stick a couple of passes in kind of two, three phases that allowed them then, you know, get those scores. But, you know, it was just, I think they're just so battle-hardened that they just stay in the fight all the time.
Yeah, and it was interesting listening to them after the game then, Johnny Holland, where, like, there wasn't much of a, oh, we gave it a real good fight and we just about came up short. Like it was Courtney Laws, George Furbank and Phil Dowson, the head coach, were speaking afterwards. And their regrets were about the litany of drop balls in the first half and the way they give up easy tries. Not so much the, like, I think going into the game, a lot of people would say, oh, Northampton just need to give this a good rattle and they might have a shot. And that's what they ultimately did. But they're looking back at it, looking at the missed opportunities they had and how they gave Leinster easy scores. Would it concern you? It's funny with Leinster, like, would it concern you in a final that they have shown up some weaknesses along the way here? If you look back at the 2022 and 2023 runs to the final, it was utterly seamless and they were dominating every single team. Whereas this year, I think maybe aside from the La Rochelle game where they really, really were absolutely excellent, they've looked good without being great in most of their matches, and they've had a few more flaws exposed. Does that make you have a few more concerns for them in the final, or do you think they've actually been tested a little bit more going into a final?
I would have concerns, like, over their ability to play for the whole 80 against Toulouse, you know what I mean? Like, but I think at the same time, when it's Toulouse on the other side, will Leinster just mentally stay in that game a bit more? They know that they're so dangerous. Northampton were dangerous too. That's kind of disingenuous to Northampton. We all know how they can play. But I think Leinster got their strategy right defensively in the first half. And you can talk about, I think it was 9 handling errors in 25 minutes from Northampton. But what did Leinster do to create that? They boxed them in at the front of the line out. They made that pass longer if Northampton wanted to play. And they put them under a bit more pressure for Northampton to kind of force it. But I think if you're Northampton looking back at that, they'll have massive... Like, the worst thing you can do after a knockout game like that is just long to replay it. Because I think if they replayed it, they'd believe themselves. They probably believe themselves anyway, Johnny, from what you're saying, you know. But I think they probably really, really believe that they can do it, you know. And they were well able to do it in the end. It's like the amount of... They had an opportunity at the end of the first half where they kicked 3 points, but that was a try in the Premiership for them, you know. And that's what happens in big games. But that's why the pressure comes on, and it's Leinster against you, so you do question yourself a small bit more. But they'd love to run that back, I'd say, and have another crack at it, because they're a very good rugby team. We've seen that. But I don't know, like, it was one of those games, and I think you get to knockout games, sometimes you're kind of going, where did the scores come from? There wasn't that much going on, and I think you might see that in the final again. Toulouse and Leinster can both score very, very quickly, like we've seen, and, you know, the Leinster try after half-time with a couple of offloads out of the carry, and all of a sudden there's a score in the corner, and you're thinking, this is just so easy for them. But Toulouse have done the same thing. Their final try to get the game kind of out of touch from Harlequins was just one opportunity from a... that head contact in the row, kick to the corner, maul out the back, flash it wide, and then in the corner. Like, it's just incredible how they can do it. But sometimes you see those finals going very kind of scrum, penalty, kick to the corner, disrupt the line out, because they both can do that. Toulouse did it to Harlequins, Leinster do it all the time with Baird at the front. You'll see a much more structured game, but I wonder who'll be brave enough to really kind of rip up the script a bit and throw everything at it. But both can go very structured, and both can go and just... tear it up in 30 seconds, like, so it'll be it's the final that everyone wanted, isn't it? But from a Northampton perspective, they were well able to change the script a bit. They could have ended up in that final if they maybe were more effective in the first half.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like, the you spoke there about the third try just after half time and some of the lovely offloads there, and I thought it was quite interesting where it was unusual for Leinster's attack, where, like, their three tries came off just like little unstructured moments as such, where you have the first one, they win a penalty, Jameson Gibson-Park gets the ball, and there was one of the angles from the touchline, you can see Gibson-Park, like, straight away he's thinking about the quick tap, he runs forward towards the post to pick up the ball, and he's about 4 yards away from the mark of the penalty. And he's already, you can see him looking out over to the touchline to see where the space is, to see is James Lowe ready to get that. And, like, by the time he has got back to the referee's mark and taken the tap, he knows full well that he's going straight out towards the touchline. He doesn't even have to look. Then the next time around, a few minutes later, it's Doris makes that break off the back of the maul, gets held up just short of the line, ball pops up, and it's the instinct again from Gibson-Park to just not even pass it, slap the hand at it. And ultimately, that was enough to throw the ball out into space. And then in the second half, you've got things like the 3 brilliant offloads in the lead up to that try from Tadhg Furlong, Dan Sheehan and Jamie Osborne. And then Ryan Baird getting thrown a poor pass behind him out by the touchline, picking it up and and just deciding, I'm going to go look for space, and runs inside. And it's all just the instinctive moments that lead up to a brilliant try down in the corner for James Lowe. And then further to that, it was something Caelan Dorris was talking about afterwards, where they're defending their own 22 with a couple of minutes to go. It's a 3-point game, and Northampton carry it up the middle, and himself and Jack Conan just get in on top of the ball. And we were trying to ask him, like, do you have time to process the situation, the clock, the scoreline in that sort of a moment when someone's carried it in? Like, because if he gets that wrong and he gives away a penalty there, it's straight in front of the 20, straight in front of the post on the 22. Northampton kick it. Finn Smith was going to kick that with his eyes closed, and you're going to extra time. Like, the jeopardy in that situation is enormous. So I suppose what I'm kind of getting to in a roundabout way is that, like, while Leinster didn't really actually show that much in terms of their, like, structured attack that we'd normally see with, like, great attacking shape and pulling people out of the way, it was just the smart moments, the instinctive moments that probably just tipped the scales in their favour.
I thought, I actually made a note in the first half while I was watching it that their shape wasn't what we're used to, but because they were playing a bit more unstructured and actually living in that a small bit more, they were comfortable with doing that. And I kind of had the note, like, what's better, to have your shape or to actually attack on instinct and where the space is and all that. So I was actually quite impressed with that with Leinster. And you can see Finn Smith made 20 tackles, didn't he? Like, that's incredible for another half. But I actually thought you could see structure in their set piece as well. They were setting up mauls and doing different things from it. Like, Caelan Dorris in the 20, deep in the 22, to break away from that maul wasn't because he decided to break away and have a moment for himself. They decided to tie Northampton in when they normally maul and get away from there. So they actually were very strategic in what they were doing. It wasn't just mental stuff that fellas were playing what's in front of them. They were told to play like that. I actually thought the James Kimson Park pass for the first try was wild. It was like, why wasn't that intercepted? Like, I know it was obviously great pass and he knew what he was doing, and brave moments win games like that. If that got intercepted or if it was someone else, you know, you're kind of going, what is he doing? Like, what is he doing? But he must have known there was space on the wings like that, the way he batted the ball into James Lowe in the second one as well. Like, there are things that are, you know, looks like it's just instinctive, but they probably saw space on the edges all week in the video, you know. So it's there's method to the madness, I think.
I think that their trust in that offload game and their trust in their connections, that, you know, they, you know, every time, like, you look at someone like Jamie Osborne, like, nearly every time he carries, he gets his arms free. But there's, you know, 9 out of 10 times there's someone on that offload line. He doesn't necessarily give it all the time, but there is someone there expecting that. And I think just the combination.
And that occupies the defender as well. Like, yeah, someone's watching out for the, you know, the reason he probably isn't throwing that offload a lot of the time is because that runner is being tracked by someone else. But that means there's space somewhere else on the pitch.
Yeah, even Furlong, like, in terms of his close quarters, he's carrying in the middle of their shape, of their three or two man shapes. But when he plants and turns, he's able to fire that offload when there's two or three guys trying to get him to deck. And again, that's something that creates a huge amount of space as well. For all, everyone's talking about their kind of, and I completely agree with Johnny, like, everyone's talking about their structure in terms of kind of their D-sets and all that kind of stuff. But, like, their unstructured play and their offloading game, particularly this weekend, I thought was unbelievable. You know, like, the try, their last try, Bird's break comes from nothing. And then it's just that, you know, that the ball's not going to die. It's not going to die. It's not going to die. And, you know, I think that's been something that we've really seen. And they can play both, you know, they can play three or four different ways if they want, in terms of, you know, they can play a kicking game, they can play that offload game, or they can play that kind of structured D, pace, power. It was, you know, for long periods of that game, it was a really, really impressive performance. They just had a couple of, in that kind of 20 minute period where Northampton got back in the game, you know, their scrum creaks a bit and it's a bit unknown, you know, it's a short arm penalty either way. It was kind of a bit of a lottery, the scrum, and that was giving them an opportunity to get in. And then, you know, kicking, like, you know, it's very hard for a place kicker, but, like, you know, those missed kicks, is it could be 27-17 in the last 5 minutes, and it's a handy, you know, it's a handy last 5 minutes. You know, they're the two things for me that that they need to kind of get right, particularly scrum, because depending on who the referee is going to be, it could be, they don't want that set piece to be a lottery.
Yeah. You know? And I think it was, I think lottery was the right word at the weekend. It just seemed, Reynal was very, very happy to reward the attacking team, almost to a fault. Like it there was no, there just didn't seem to be any consistency to the decisions. It was just if the attacking team, if the scrum collapses and the attacking team has any sort of a marginal advantage going forward, they seemed to be getting a penalty. Even aside from scrum, and we mentioned like with the offload and stuff, just as an aside, it popped into my head in the last couple of minutes. I think in terms of all around game, and not just doing the fancy stuff that we've always loved to see from him, but Tadhg Furlong, I don't know if either of you wants to take this. Tadhg Furlong in the last, I'd say, probably since the early rounds of the Six Nations, has probably looked as good, I think, as he has for maybe 2-3 years. I don't know how you feel about that. That's just something I've thought, where it looked like maybe last year he probably wasn't getting on the ball as much as we used to see from him. I think in the last 2-3 months, there's a lot more power in his carries. There's a lot more confidence in his play in terms of doing the dirty stuff, but also doing the fancy stuff that we've always loved seeing from him as well. I think he's hit some pretty good form over the last couple of months.
I was going to say it there, but I realised I was going to cut across to Johnny, but I thought he's pivotal in what Leinster are doing at the moment. You know, you said it, Johnny, that he's in there and there's two or three fellas around him and then he's still getting the ball away. He's back to some of his best, I think. Like he's a real threat at the moment all over the pitch, because, and you don't say that about a tight head prop, but because like he's a big boy, he takes some stopping and he does it both sides of the ball, and then he's got a scrum that is just, you know, he mightn't be shouting from the rooftops about his scrum at the moment. Like, it's not, he's just setting a platform for Leinster the whole time, and it's guaranteed, like, isn't it? He's rarely an issue in there. And then to be able to offload and dictate some of their play and trust him to throw passes like that in the middle of those shapes, I think he's been unbelievable. You know, and that you need people like that, you know, when you're winning trophies the way Leinster hope to, like, you need all positions to be able to contribute, not just rely on halfbacks and one or two fellas for moments. Like, when your tight head prop can have moments like that, as well as Jamie Osborne throwing a ball away from contact in the 22, when a tight head is doing it, you know you're going to cause trouble. Like,
yeah. So they've two URC games now between now and the final. Ospreys at home this Saturday evening at the RDS, and then Ulster away next week. It was interesting on the team selection. Leo kind of brought it up himself in one of his answers after the game, where he kind of said, you know, we were asking maybe what Northampton did to make it so close, and he brought up maybe did they overrest players, or were Northampton a bit more battle hardened, and he kind of acknowledged that that's the tricky balance to get. But he was asked, are the players kind of going to be wrapped up in cotton wool for the next couple of weeks, and he seemed fairly definite that that's not going to be the case. He didn't necessarily say we're going to be going all guns blazing in terms of team selection for the next 2 weeks, but Johnny Murphy, I reckon over these games against Ospreys and Ulster, what we'll probably see is almost a, not so much an A team and a B team, but a 1A and 1B, where maybe a handful of those frontline Champions Cup players will probably play this week and will be off next week, but the other handful will come in next week. Sort of like what they do around those Christmas interpros, might be my guess.
Yeah, I think you'll probably, his use of the bench then as well, I think will be important. You might even have some guys that'll be involved in, say, this full block of four games, maybe. That, you know, they'll be on the bench and they'll try and restrict their amount of game time. They obviously have to try and get, I don't know what the situation is with their kind of three, you know, high profile injuries, whether, yeah, you know, Ryan, Keenan and Ringrose are going to come back in. They'll have to manage them if they want to get them back involved. So you're probably going to see some rotation, but not massive. And I think, my personal opinion now, I think the way the season falls actually suits them. And also the fact that they're second and they need to get up with the fixtures this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, Glasgow are playing Bulls in South Africa. So like, there's an opportunity to get a good win this weekend with a very strong team and then go. And then if there's any selection things that they're looking at in 3 weeks' time, okay, who are the really tight calls here? You know, is it, if James Ryan doesn't make it, is it going to be Ross Maloney or Jenkins? Right, then we have to figure out, you have to give those guys that opportunity. And then you probably need to try and get, probably get Luke McGrath some good game time in case something goes wrong. You know, you're going to have to, you've a lot to manage, but I don't think you're going to see wholesale changes in any way. And I think it gives them an opportunity to be really, you know, really primed, match fit, if they can get it right with the squad they have, for that Toulouse game.
Yeah. So that's Leinster and the Ospreys, RDS, the Saturday evening, 7:35 kickoff. The big game this weekend in the URC from an Irish point of view, Munster and Connacht, is 5:15 kickoff at the Thomond Park on Saturday, live on RT2 and RT Player. And Johnny Holland, it was funny, Orgy Snyman was up for media duty with Munster yesterday, and beforehand, I was doing just a little double checking kind of stats and figures and stuff like that. I think it probably sums up the trouble he's had since joining Munster, where, presuming he starts this weekend, it would be his first time starting for Munster at Thomond Park, and it would be his first time playing an Interpro since he did that first injury against Leinster on his debut. I mean, those two things just sum up the pretty difficult journey he's had to go through over close to 4 years now.
It's mad. Like, I didn't realise that. That's some stat. But yeah, like, obviously we all know he's been missing for quite a while, and he comes in and he's back out again. But he's so, so good. You have to play him. You have to play him, and he'll cause so much trouble. But I think, Munster are getting kind of steely at the moment in the way that they did last year. And I know there's more expectation on them now, and people are kind of expecting that, in terms of, like, you know, Connacht won't be obviously taking them any bit lightly, but like last year was kind of a run out of nowhere. Now we can kind of see it happening again. But I think when they've got good availability, they're at home, they know what's at stake. I think you're going to see a performance from them this weekend, hopefully, from my supporters' perspective anyway. But I think, like, Connacht have been in and out the last of JJ Hanrahan, which is awful for him. I feel bad for him. I feel sorry for him. But that's a massive loss for Connor, because he's been doing a lot for them as well. You know, so RG Snyman, Tyke Byrne, Gavin Coombs, with the way he's going, that's a pack that, you know, if they take the game on the way they should at the weekend, you know, you should see them winning, shouldn't you? And having a crack with Glasgow going to the Bulls, like you said, Johnny, I think Leinster is a formality, to be fair. But that's quite tight at the top, and then, you know, Munster going towards the top of the table, it's very encouraging for them.
Yeah, it is. I'll bring up JJ Hanrahan in a couple of minutes again, but just to stay on Munster, and like as Johnny said there, the fact now that they have their sights set on top two, and it's funny because when they lost at the Sports Ground against Connacht on New Year's Day, a lot of people were probably wondering, were they going to be sleepwalking their way or just about crawling into the top eight by the end of the season? Because you're thinking, okay, they still have to go to South Africa, and, you know, you couldn't possibly expect two bonus point wins there, but ultimately that's what they delivered. Six wins in a row in the URC, and now I don't know why they're mathematically certain of top eight, but I'm almost certain they would be. They look fairly certain to be finishing top four, never mind top eight. And like Johnny Murphy, when you think about how hard they had to go about doing it the hard way last year, with like trips to Glasgow, Aviva Stadium, and then Stormers in the final in Cape Town, they're in a situation now with three games to go where they can realistically finish in the top two with a couple of wins. They could realistically win all three of these games coming up, but the pressure is on them now to a certain extent as well, and they haven't necessarily coped well with the pressure over this season.
Yeah, but you look at kind of the injuries, you know, what you just said at the start about someone like who's one of their main talismen in terms of, like, it's one of his first Interpros game and however long, first start and Thomond Park. Like, it's mental to think about how injury constrained and injury hamstrung they've been for a long period of time. And the fact that they're in this position is a huge credit to them all. It's interesting, you see kind of little bits of kind of, you know, the Munster Access stuff and the social media clips. You know, they obviously went down to South Africa, you know, Graham Rowntree saying at the start that, like, this is our time. This is where we turned it last year. And then, you know, the different clips of piece of what touring's about, how they, you know, what they were going to do and how they did it. They're one of the form sides, if not the form side, in over the last kind of three or four rounds in the URC. And they have a huge opportunity now. If they could get to, you know, if they'd be targeting a bonus point win this weekend, depending on results, then it's a shot to who finishes first or second for them. You know, when you look at the table, I think it's a massive credit to the wider squad, not necessarily, you know, that they've managed to stay in and you know, be within, you know, a shot of a home semi-final. And I think they've done incredibly well to manage that wider squad and get those guys back fit, and they're all coming fit at the right time now.
Yeah, and it's funny, you mentioned how Tyson is at the top of the table. Yesterday, just for argument's sake, I looked at the remaining, I think it was 24 games in the regular season of the URC, and just I quickly off the top of my head jotted down who do I think is going to win and lose each of these games, and whether it's going to be 4-point wins or 5-point wins or one single bonus point or something like that. And I tallied it all up. And when I got to the end of it, Munster, Leinster, the Bulls and Glasgow were all level on 65 points in the top four. So if we do end up in a situation like that, it's going to be absolute mayhem. But the Johnny Holland, the Lions win in particular, I think it's the most important of the season, I think, in a certain way, because I think they proved they could win a game in a different way. In that game, I think one of the things we've said about Munster all season is when they've played well and when the attack has clicked, they've obviously looked brilliant. But then they've had days where things went against them, or the weather was bad, and the hands weren't going to, or the passes weren't going to hand, and they looked awful at times. But I think they showed against the Lions that they don't need to have the ball or dominate the ball to win a game, and it was a case of let the Lions have the ball, let them run themselves down, use up the clock. We get four chances, we score four tries and we win. And I think it was a very, very important way for them to show that everything didn't have to be going in their favour for them to win a game and win well.
Yeah, and I think they started that game with like contestable kicks, turnovers and kicks at posts. Like, you know, I think it was a very mature way of, I think what I like about Munster, and I suppose we don't want to be talking too prematurely here, but like, because there's a bit to go yet, but what I like about them, and when teams are playing well, they'll pick a strategy for each game, and they're quite comfortable with that. And I think Munster showed that against the Lions. You know, they weren't having to prove themselves in attack because they just kicked the ball, they turned it over, and they got Jack Crowley to kick his points. You know, they would have been 12-0 up only for a neck roll in front of the post. So they were 9-0 up, and that's how they got a foothold into the game. Like, you know, and I think as well they were quite strategic around their replacements. They knew they weren't going to go at high altitude two in a row. You know, so I think it's easy to say that after they win and it all looks very impressive, but it just looks very, very comfortable with the strategy. You can see big players stepping up on the pitch, but you can actually kind of see a lot of coaching going through that as well, can't you? That there's a strategy. They're all very certain of what they're doing. They're very comfortable in their own skin. I think that goes back to even the Access Munster stuff, Johnny, that you've been talking about. Yeah. They don't really care who sees it. Like, you know, I know it's kind of put it after the fact or whatever, but you still get insights into what they're doing, and they don't really care. You know, they're quite comfortable who they are, and that's maybe why that's why they were quite comfortable last year in the semi final against Leinster, and Jack Crowley wearing 12 kicking a drop goal to win that and everything else. You know, so I think they're in a really good place. Like, you know, the pressure seems to be off them, but they'll be putting themselves under a lot of pressure, and they can do that in a couple of different ways. Like you said, you know, their attack can click, but they can also strangle teams and put them under pressure. They can go to set piece, they can turn over set piece, so they're in a really good place. But we all know, you know, that gets you so far, but you have to deliver on a certain day to pick up anything meaningful. Like,
absolutely. And this one on Saturday is a big day. And coming back to JJ Hanrahan, Johnny Murphy, like you touched on it there a couple of minutes ago, like it's just there's not really much to say other than it's just a shit blow for someone who has actually had a really, really good season. And he's someone who's been around the block in terms of, you know, Munster, Northampton, back to Munster, Claremont Dragons. And you were always wondering, was he going to settle somewhere? And he comes to Connacht this year, and this is probably as consistent he's looked over the course of a season as he has for a good while. And all of a sudden to just be hit with that blow, which was the most innocuous little, you don't even want to blame the Dragons player too much because it was just it was a bit of a shoulder off the ball and he just obviously fell badly. And now he's looking, Pete Wilkins reckons it's probably, you know, best case scenario, it'll be early in the new year when he's back. Jack Carty is obviously fit this weekend for Connacht, which is softens the blow ever so slightly, but it's just an awful blow for a player to be to have a season ended like that when they had looked so well over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think he just really fit in into terms of, you know, a new coaching structure came in. It was very, you know, let's play, you know, under Mark Sexton, the type of game Mark wants to play, suits JJ down to the ground, you know, playing on a really good quick track. Everything was there for kind of JJ to kick on, and he really has. You know, the thing with an ACL, I've done it myself, it's a long process. Like, it's a, you know, it's a 6 to 9 monther and it's kind of day to day. So, you know, look, once he gets into kind of his routine and he'll figure his way through it. But yeah, it's a bitterly frustrating blow for someone like JJ, who's really shown the talent he has, and he's been in brilliant form. But ultimately, most importantly, JJ's a great lad, and having stuff like this for 6 to 9 months, when, as I say, he's been kind of moving around and he seems to have really settled in Connacht over the last kind of 9 months. It's absolutely gutted for him, to be honest, because he's just such a great lad.
Yeah, best wishes to him. Pete Wilkins said he's going to be having an operation later this month and then the rehab starts. So best wishes to JJ from all here at the pod. In terms of Connacht, though, Johnny Holland, 3 games left, Munster, Stormers and Leinster. Pete Wilkins yesterday said it has been nice the way the season has kind of been compartmentalised in the last few weeks, where obviously they would have loved to still be playing Challenge Cup rugby or Champions Cup rugby. But the fact with these little European breaks where they had 2 games against Zebra and the Dragons, and full focus there was go out, get 10 points. You get a weekend off and then you hit into Munster and the Stormers. That's 2 more games. Throw everything you can at that. Then you got a week off and then you got Leinster. It's a difficult run in for them and they are going to need at minimum 1 win, maybe even 2, but maybe they could get by with a win and a couple of bonus points to scrape into top 8 or top 7, which might be needed. But it's make or break time for them now over these next 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, it is. And I think, like, to be fair to Connacht, they can put on performances. Like, we've seen them frustrate Munster a lot. Have they won 4 of the last 6 against Munster or something like that? So they're, you know, they really do get under the skin of Munster, and because they're good enough to, you know. So they're, I'm sure, like, we're talking Munster up there, but I'm sure Connacht will be lapping that up. Like, they're well able to put on a performance. They have the style that can, all the Irish provinces are playing kind of a similar style, really, aren't they? But they can, if they can get their set piece right, if they can match the Munster pack, you know, they can obviously go on and win that game. But you were talking about the top of the league being so tight, like where Connacht are at the moment, they're all at 44 points. It's absolutely mental. And like a team like Benetton, even like going so well, you know, there's nothing guaranteed. So with the week off, I think this is the one that Connacht will target, like the Stormers at home, obviously, but yeah, you'd hope a home game will look after itself. And then Leinster is going to be obviously very difficult, but it's not been beyond them before. But I think the Munster one with the weekend off before it, that's the one you put all your eggs into that basket. And I think if they can turn Munster over here, they obviously get points on the board, but they get a massive amount of momentum going into a home game and Leinster. So you'd have to think that this is the pivotal one for them, and they're well able to cause I'd call it an upset. They probably think about that as an insult, but they're well able to do that.
Yeah, and look, the weather this weekend, I know a Wednesday forecast can't really be trusted too much, but as from what I can see, it's going to be sunny and 21 degrees in Limerick, even on by 5 o'clock on Saturday evening. So conditions for a game of rugby are going to be absolutely unbelievable. Nice firm track as well. And just like Johnny Murphy speaking on how tight the table is there. And we can nearly kind of bring Ulster in on this as well, because they're all part of that scrap. Like Wilkins yesterday was saying that a few weeks ago, he had said that he had a rough figure in mind for how many wins they need between now and the end of the season to be safe. But he said yesterday he's stopped doing that now, because every time he sets himself a target, the following Monday morning, the picture is completely changed, because, you know, this team has picked up 4 points. This team hasn't got anything when everyone thought they were going to get 5. And the whole situation down here is a complete mess. Dennis Leamy yesterday probably said it best, where he said it's just stop looking at the table. win your games and the table will bloody take care of itself at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think so. I think with that, like, you know, we're talking about a race for kind of top, you know, for home semi-finals, but like there's, you know, the Lions aren't out of it yet either, yeah. You know, so you have, and then you also have the kicker of the Sharks. So that's a big thing for the weekend that, you know, it's not with the Shark and the Sharks. They're actually probably going to be really interesting in this. Do they rest people because they've traveled back in the target that they'll play next weekend, a stronger side next week in the build up to their chance to get into the European Cup. So they're going to have a big, and then it's who they play, you know, last weekend of the final weekend, the Sharks play the Bulls. So that's going to have a fair kind of outlaw. They could be obviously celebrating and being in the ORC. They might, you know,
they might have nothing to play for at that stage.
Exactly.
Yeah. They can't get top eight off the actual league placing. So their season could be done after the Challenge Cup final.
Yeah. So but with everyone playing everyone, like it's going to be really interesting to see what that top kind of what 5, 6, 7 and then 8, where that lands is going to be. Like, it's brilliant the way the league is structured and the way that everyone, it comes down to kind of, I suppose it's a representation of how strong the league is now with the South African sides, that there's jeopardy more or less in every game this weekend. It'll be interesting to watch, but I think the Sharks are probably going to be they could be a thorn in a lot of people's side, and not in this competition, in another competition that everyone doesn't really know what's what, you know?
Yeah, I think for that Challenge Cup final, everyone in Johannesburg, Swansea, Edinburgh, Treviso, Ulster, Connacht are going to be cheering on Gloucester in that final. To finish up on Ulster then, away to the Scarlets on Saturday, 3:15 kickoff. So Ulster at the moment are seventh. They're right in that squash for the playoffs at the moment. So the Stormers are in fifth place on 45 points. Ulster and Connacht are back then on 44, and all the way down in 11th are the Lions. So 6 points separating fifth and 11th, completely wide open with a few games to go. But for Ulster this weekend, Johnny Holland, away to the Scarlets. I know it's away from home, but the Scarlets have been brutal, to say the least, this season. And if you want to have any realistic hope of getting the playoffs, you should be winning away to the Scarlets, and you should be winning comfortably and picking up your 5 points.
Yeah, they'd have to, because I think the way the league is structured, Johnny, you were saying that everyone's playing everyone. Like, the interpros at the end of the season is a madness, like, isn't it? Because everyone beats everyone as well in those, like, you know. So Ulster having to play Leinster and Munster aren't easy games, obviously. Again, like we spoke with Connacht targeting the Munster game, possibly Ulster have to go to Scarlets and get the maximum if they're going to, you know, there's going to have to be some form of buffer going into two Interpro games. The chances are they win one of them, they won't win both of them, you know. So fair play to them if they do, because I'm sure we would have said that about Munster going to South Africa. But, you know, they have to win, and they have to get momentum in that win at Scarlets away. Otherwise, it's going to be high pressure for a group that, you know, obviously, new management and everything, and they back themselves, but, you know, when the pressure comes on, you don't have a lot of foundations laid for answering those problems, like, you know. So away to Scarlets is going to have to be a huge one for them.
Yeah, and they obviously have the blow as well. James Hume, like JJ Hanrahan, is getting ACL surgery. He suffered that injury against Cardiff a few weeks back as well, and best wishes to him. They do have Rob Herring back this weekend, so their kind of injury problems are easing ever so slightly. It's interesting to see they're still scrambling around for an out half next year. Like, there was a rumour about Aaron Cruden that popped up a few weeks ago, and I kind of saw it and went, geez, do you know what? Aaron, like, it feels like he's been out of the game for a few years now. But, like, he came out himself last week or two ago and actually confirmed it, that they'd made an approach for him. And it's difficult to see how they've got here to this end of the season. I know they've money to spend now with Stephen Kitchoff leaving, but they're leaving themselves in a bind trying to recruit players for next season, trying to recruit a coach for next season. Is Richie Murphy going to be the man? Have you seen evidence there to suggest that Richie Murphy is a decent long-term candidate for them? Either of you, Johnny?
Yeah, I look, my opinion has always been that I think Richie, you know, it's an opportunity for Richie, and it's an opportunity for Richie to be given a job for 3 to 4 years, given his own team, and really try, you know, put his own stamp on Ulster rugby as a whole. All the stuff that's going around the media, there's, you know, we go back and we're talking about it, you know, the different kind of social media things between, you know, Fez and all, and like, it just doesn't seem to be a kind of happy camp at the moment, or it might be in, but they're very frustrated with what's going on and how they're being spoken about. I think that all can be helped by taking away, you know, any, you know, any lack of knowledge around what their future is, any, you know, putting stability there and going, okay, this is what's going to happen. This is who the head coach is going to be. This is who his D coach is going to be. This is, you know, and have it very clear and give, you know, having two young Irish coaches on the pod here, I suppose, like, there's an opportunity to go, right, guys, there's an Irish homegrown coaching ticket going into Ulster, give it a go. Yeah. And here are your, you know, here's what you're going to be given to try and develop that and give it a good old rattle. I think that's something that, in my opinion, should happen. And then they need to, you know, they need to sign people and get them done and dusted and have, like, take away all the hearsay about, oh, this guy, that guy, and take it out of the media and just say, look, this is what's happening. This is the plan. And we're going to move on with that plan. And hopefully that's in Champions Cup rugby. But like, they need.
You're not going to sign people when we don't know if Richie's in the job or
yeah.
not. And
yeah.
He's well good enough to do that. He's an Irish coach. He knows the system. He's been with Ireland. He's been around the place. He's taken the Irish 20s. I know. Like, maybe that stuff is going around the media. Are they trying to give him a director of rugby? You'd wonder, are they trying to bring someone in, but also keep Richie? Like, wouldn't you? And maybe that'd be a good idea. But and give him some support to someone that can help him out with some of the obvious kind of you know, logistical and issues that you have to deal with, as well as coaching the actual team. Like, you know, it's a lot of work for him. So you wonder if that's what they're doing. But that's the point that Johnny's making. You're wondering, and players who are going to be signing on will be wondering who's in charge, what's going on. You won't get a lot of certainty from it, and you probably won't sign. So they do need to get certainty, like Johnny said.
Yeah. The final point in them then, obviously they had the win against Cardiff that was controversial and was not a good performance, but the win against Benetton then, which has eased a little bit of pressure, they did play some really, really nice stuff in that, and they were absolutely depleted. It was basically an Ulster B team because of all the injuries, and I think a lot of people really, really feared for them going into that game. I know the scoreline probably made it look a bit closer than it was, but that was Benetton scoring a try with the last play of the game to bring it back to a one-score match. It did look in that game that a little bit of the pressure, a little bit of the steam was released out of them. You know, the pressure valve was released, and they've got themselves back up into seventh spot at the moment. One more win puts them in a really, really good position. Then next week, they could be playing a Leinster team that are, you know, that are resting a lot of players. Getting to the end of this season and just locking in that Champions Cup spot, I think if you're Richie Murphy, if you can put a pin in that, you're relatively pleased with the work you've done, I think, are you?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, getting Champions Cup rugby from Ulster, from what has gone on throughout the year there, I think is a good thing for Ulster, and then you're into knockout rugby and you have a free shot at. But I think getting to knockout rugby, and most importantly, from a financial and every, you know, from a development perspective, being in the Champions Cup is huge. Starts this weekend. They probably need to get, maybe, I know we said we weren't going to do, but maybe 6-7 points out of the last three games. And if they can get that, then they have a chance. But yeah, I think, you know, knockout rugby and Champions Cup rugby is a huge, from where they were around Christmas and what's gone on, I think it's a huge result for them.
Yeah, Certainly will be. Well, listen, lads, I've kept you long enough. That was a great chat. Munster and Connacht live on RT2 and RT Player this Saturday evening, 5:15 p.m. kickoff in Thomond Park. So tune in for that one. Thanks a million for watching the podcast this week. Thanks to Johnny Murphy and Johnny Holland for joining us on the pod as well. And we'll speak to you again very soon.